So we are almost to the end of this text, this beautiful book called Manashodhanam, or Purification of the Mind. They say there are two kinds of impurities of the mind. One is the negative qualities like anger, greed, jealousy, confusion, delusion, and so on. And we have studied in the past how to remove them, like if hypocrisy or show-off can be removed by the company of saints. Agitation can be removed by practicing silence. Violence by control of the body, and so on. So I won't go into the details of that. You can either get the book or listen to them online. And then last week, we talked about the disturbances that affect us, that agitate the mind. One is that the mind is negative, has anger, greed, jealousy, hatred. And the other is the disturbances of the mind, agitation. And what causes my mind to be agitated? One is from people, my neighbor, my spouse, my child, my boss, my parents. And so how do we handle them? By compassion. And again, we had done it last week, so I won't go into detail. But if somebody is continuously hateful towards me, I develop compassion rather than anger. So that is one, obstacles that come from the neighborhood. Then other obstacles come from nature, tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, drought, excessive rain, no rain. So those by practicing equanimity. In life, there will be heat and cold and problems will be there, but I have to remain balanced. And the third one was coming from within. One is from nature, one is from my surroundings. And the third one is disturbances coming from within, where I get myself agitated. So we said do that by practice of yoga, by practice of self-control, and by dedicating your activities to the Lord, constantly remembering Him, you can reduce your inner disturbances. The last one is sleep or delusion, which is called tamas. So we'll chant verse number 21 and 22 because these two verses deal with what is called as the gunas or the qualities. And this topic is so extensive that in the Bhagavad Gita, which some of you attend on Sundays, there are three chapters given to that. There's probably 150 verses. So I'll try to summarize the topic maybe in today's class and in the next class. In an hour, I'll do my best. Obviously, if you need to know more, you can read the Bhagavad Gita, chapters 14, 17, and 18, those who have it. So we'll chant verse number 21 on page 45. Kripaya bhutajam dukham. Daivam jahyat samadhina. Daivam jahyat samadhina. Atmajam yoga viryena. Yoga viryena. Nidram sattva nishevaya. So today, we'll just do the end, nidram, the sleep or ignorance by sattva nishevaya, by practicing sattva. And what is sleep and what is sattva, we'll cover in more detail. And then let's do verse number 22 on page 50. Rajastamascha sattvena. Sattvena sattvam chopashamena cha etat sarvam guru bhaktya purusho hyanja sajayet. So it says rajas and tamas should be conquered by sattva, and sattva by meditation. But all of these qualities that we have studied can be obtained by devotion to the Guru. So this is the verses, and then we'll spend a little bit talking about it. There are three terms here: sattva, rajas, and tamas. And these in Sanskrit are called gunas, also means qualities. Our mind at any given moment is under the influence of one of these three qualities. When I get up in the morning, I could be in a very peaceful mood. So I say I'm in sattva. I'm peaceful, I'm tranquil, I'm very calm. Maybe I have done my meditation or done my morning prayers. I've had a good night's sleep. So sattvam represents peace, tranquility, truth, unselfishness, and to see the oneness in the entire creation. But as I get to work, I become active. Okay, I have to move. I have 2-3 cups of coffee. Then I'm all wired up. Okay, I'm ready to work. I'm ready to go. Because until then, I can't even open my eyes. But when the 2 cups of coffee go, then I'm happy. So then rajas represents activity. But activity in the sense of overactivity. There can be activity which can be peaceful, or there can be activity which is overactive. And rajas also represents desire, passion, anger, selfishness. So I work all day. It's a dog-eat-dog world. It's so competitive, this corporate world. You know, I have to pull down everybody else for me to succeed. I have to, other vice presidents in the company, I have to make sure that they don't get the CEO's ear. I get there and I can badmouth them. Or if I'm running a business, then I make sure that I am on top and anybody is my competitor, I cut his neck. Either physically or not physically, these days we don't do it, but by business, by destroying his business. The third mood is called tamas, which at the end of the day, I'm tired now. I have done so much work. My life was so stressful today. I had so many problems. The stock market went down, and then one of my businesses is losing money, and then my competitor came out with a new product, and I am stressed out. So I come home and I can't sleep. I'm wired. So what do? I take a couple of Valium, have a couple of glasses of wine. I'm mellow. And then I go into tamas. Now, these qualities can be there in an individual throughout the day. And to some extent, it is required. I need to be in a peaceful mood to have peace and tranquility. Then when I go out into the world, I have to work. And then at night, I do need to sleep. So to some extent, having these qualities is okay. The problem comes when an individual is either sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic, which means an individual who is sattvic all the time or the majority of the time, or people who are saints or spiritual seekers or people who love God and who love everybody. So majority of the time they spend in sattva. They spend in the peace and tranquility and truth, serving others unselfishly and seeing oneness, seeing God in all. And those are the saintly people and the scholars and people who are seekers, may not have realized the truth, may not be like Jesus or Buddha, because they were even beyond all that. But they are on the spiritual path. So they go to church or temple and they read good books and they meditate. And so they are on the spiritual path. So they are called that majority of the time they spend their time in sattva. And then we'll talk in detail about their attitude and vision of each group, how they work, what is their activity, what are their relationships, how do they utilize resources, what is their diet, and what kind of gods they worship. You mean to say they worship different gods? Yes, they do. So people who are more peaceful, And the majority of us live in rajas, where I have to compete, I have to desire, I have passion, I have anger. And they say, without desire and passion, you can't get ahead in this world. You have to step on people's head to climb to the top. Otherwise, if you don't pull them down, they're going to excel. So that person becomes selfish and overactive, works from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. and stressed out and angry and upset at the world and competitive, and his adrenaline is racing. And if he can't do it from within, he does it with drugs or with monster drinks, you know, or things like that, so I can increase my activity. And then there are other people who are tamasic. And these are the people who are basically lazy. They sleep all the time. They depend on society to take care of them. I mean, if somebody has a physical or a mental handicap, that's understandable. But these people are healthy, but they just don't want to work. And even if they do work, they procrastinate. They put off. They forget. You gave me the job, I forgot, I couldn't do it. Or they become fanatics, where they look at what I believe is right and everybody else is wrong. So everybody else should be destroyed, should be killed, should be slaughtered. So either they become lazy or they become fanatics. So this is in brief introduction to the three different qualities. Now we shall see how these three people work in the world. What is their attitude and vision? So let us talk about attitude and vision. A sattvic person, his attitude, as I mentioned, is peaceful. He's calm. Why? Because he realizes that rajas and tamas are negative qualities. It does not mean that the person doesn't work. Peace and tranquil doesn't mean that he just sits and does nothing. He works, but he works unselfishly, truthfully. Whatever activities he does, he's honest. He sees the oneness, that is his vision, that all of them are God's creation, and so am I. And every one of them is divine. Every one of them has that divinity in them that we call as Om, or that you can call as Jesus. Jesus is there in everyone. They are all children of that one heavenly Father. Not only that, but God created us out of himself, because he alone was. God, even you can't even call him he. It is that energy, that total consciousness. Of course, they call him he, but some people worship the mother goddess, call her she, which is okay. But the point is that there is only one consciousness from whom this world emerged. And when God alone was, then how did he create this universe? Out of himself. He himself became this universe. So we are all nothing but that one divinity, just as clay, when it is made into different parts, they may look different. Blue part, green part, small part, big part, jug, vase, cup, saucer, plate. But when you look at the essence of all of these parts, there may be a Chinese part, or there may be a Grecian vase, and there may be a beautiful English, you know, cutlery or English, you know, silverware or English, you know, chinaware that I have got from England. But the essence of them all is clay. So we may distinguish, you know, this part is more beautiful than that. This is belongs to me, and that belongs to you. And then if I can somehow get yours, then I'll be even happier. So we see the differences, but a wise person sees clay. That the essence of all of them is clay. Yeah, there are differences. He sees the differences, but he does not get into mine and yours. He sees that there is one clay, and they are all clay and clay alone. So similarly, a wise person, which you and I have a problem, because we see differences. This is my friend. She's my enemy. I love this person. So we have all these likes and dislikes. But a wise person sees only oneness. So that is his or her vision. wise person sees oneness. What about the rajasic person, the passionate one, the competitor, you know, the politician, the administrator, the CEO of the company? He sees competition everywhere. Okay, there is competition, and by hook or by crook, I have to overcome them. And so his whole goal is to put others down. How can I become more successful than this person? How can I subjugate him? And his whole attitude is he's trying to show he's superior. Like you ask him which university you came from. I'm from Harvard. And then he'll ask you, where are you from? He'll say, I'm from the University of Mississippi. He say, Mississippi? Do they even have universities there? So that is the attitude. You know, he's always trying to show that he's better than everybody else. He's superior and the other one is not good enough. And so his attitude is competitive. Why? Because he has desire. He wants to succeed. He wants to be number one. That's what they say. You know, in fact, there is one saying that, you know, the only one that counts is the number one. You know, looking out for number one. I have to be the number one. And so that's why, like in the football also, whom do we remember? We only remember who won the Super Bowl. You know, nobody remembers who was the second or who was in the, you know, in the AFC championship or the NFC with Super Bowl winner. So that is one attitude. But the English have another attitude, and which many people also practice here, is that it does not matter whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. If you play the game correctly, by the rules, put your best effort, you will still succeed. And if you succeed, that's very good. And if you don't succeed, you don't go home and cry and, you know, and get, you say, okay, I did my best, the other team was better. So it's not important whether you win or lose. It's important how you play the game. You play the game fairly, you play the game honestly, you play without cheating. But if you're going to cheat and if you're going to put, you know, something in your ball, that, you know, the pitchers do that, Or if you can, like the coach, you know, one of the coaches was reading the other team's signals. And that's how he used to win Super Bowls and championships. Why? Because he had figured out how to read the opposing. So he might have won the Super Bowl, but in the game of life he has lost because he was a cheater. So that's what they say, that it is more important, and in the long run, what matters is how you play the game, not whether you win or lose. We're not saying that you should not try to win or that you should be a wimp and let people walk over, but I should play within the rules. I should play fairly. But a person who has desire, he has too much passion. A limited amount of passion and activity is good, but when it takes over your life, that is an overwhelming desire. I must at all costs, no matter whether I do it the right way or the wrong way. And then when the person doesn't get what he wanted, he gets angry, he becomes selfish, and he's overactive. So that is his vision. And as I said, the tamasic person is basically lazy, selfish, thinks that society owes me something, so society has to take care of me. But how does that person become fanatic? What they say, that tamas, sattva, looks at oneness. Everything is one. Everything is divine. Rajas looks at differences. Okay, this is my friend and he helps me in my business. She is my competitor. He belongs to my church. She belongs to my religion. They belong to my country, my race, my nationality. So he or she sees differences and then distinguishes and is very selective on who his friends are or whom he can associate with. But tamas goes even one step worse, where he says that this small thing alone is right. I alone am right, everybody else is wrong. And whoever doesn't believe it as I do should be destroyed. He can become a fanatic even in religion. That only my religion is good, everybody else should be killed. or only people who go to my church will go to heaven. Everybody else will go to hell. That means that, you know, there are 7 billion people, and suppose there are 30,000 people going to your church, or 100,000 belong to, so to your faith. So only 100,000 or 30,000 will go to heaven, and the remaining 7 billion all will go to hell, then hell will become overcrowded. They won't have any place, and they'll have to expand hell, and they'll have to build multiple hells. And even saintly people, just because they don't go to my church, even the person may be saintly, may be loving, may be helpful, but because he didn't come to worship in this particular building, he'll go to hell. So that is called fanaticism. Or if they don't believe in my faith, I'm going to bomb them, I'm going to kill them, I'm going to destroy them. So that is also an aspect of tamas, the fanaticism, the intolerance, where nothing else is right, I alone am right. So that is the attitude and the vision. Now, how do they work? There is a beautiful book I'm reading. It's called Not Too Loose, Not Too Tight, Just Right. So rajasic people overwork, as I said. They work 18 hours a day. And why? If they were working 18 hours a day to serve, like we have seen some of our saints, our Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, who started the mission, he actually worked more than 18 hours a day. He slept basically 3 hours at night from 12 to 3, and maybe rested for a half an hour in the daytime. So maybe 3 or 3.5 hours. So he worked 20 hours a day. But he worked to spread this knowledge, to serve mankind. So even though he was working, his work was unselfish. Buddha, after he realized, he traveled. He walked through the villages and went and talked to the people. But these people are working for their own personal glory, so that I might become rich and I might become successful and I might have more money and more power and more this and more that and more friends. So they are overactive. The tamasic people are underactive. So they are overactive and these are underactive. As I said, they don't do anything. They just sleep at home. They wake up at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning and then maybe have some breakfast and then maybe, you know, move around a little bit and then again they take a nap in the afternoon, you know, siesta, and then again in the... So they are overactive. These are underactive. But sattva has the right kind of activity. Why? Because his or her activity comes from the inner self. It comes from his contact with the Lord. So it's not that the person doesn't work. You might say, well, does this person accomplish more or does this person? We all know that when an activity is done with ego, with anger, with jealousy, with greed, then it colors your vision. And even when you're working in the world, you're so agitated, your efficiency is not there. You are not that good. You may work many hours, but your accomplishment is less. But a person who is working calmly and peacefully and dedicating his activities to the Lord and seeing oneness, the end result is the person accomplishes a lot more. Now Christ, all he did was convert 10 disciples. Was it 10 or 12? 12, right. And maybe a few fishermen, that's all. But the power of his words was so much because he was in contact with the Father in heaven. He was one. And so that little bit of energy that he put in there spread to the whole world, where there are billions of Christians, you know, Catholics and Protestants and evangelists and, you know, Seventh-day Adventists and all these different, you know, Mormons, they also believe in Christ. And then the Jehovah's Witness, I mean, they're different, of course, groups. And then they're fundamental Christian, evangelists. But they all owe their teachings to Christ. They all believe in the Bible. Buddha, he actually preached to a few villages. He traveled. Those days you had to walk by foot. He didn't have internet and email and you know, and jet planes. He didn't travel, but the knowledge that he gave spread to the whole world, where we have more than a billion Buddhists, you know, in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in Thailand, in Nepal, in Burma, in parts of India. So sattvic people accomplish a lot more, even though it looks like they don't work, because they have the power of the inner self. And tamasic people, of course, accomplish nothing. Or if they accomplish anything, it is destruction. It is destruction of themselves and destruction of others. So we have only covered today the work and the attitude and vision. Next week, we shall continue this talk and talk about what is, how is their activity, how are their relationships, how do they utilize resources, what is their diet, and even what kind of gods they worship. And then, maybe the week after, we'll learn about how to go beyond the gunas. So this is just an introduction to the subject. There is a lot more. As I said, there are 3 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita devoted to that. But in the next talk, we'll try to cover it a little more. Anybody has any questions or comments? I think both. You may be born with certain qualities, and that we say is based on your past karmas. Because of your previous vasanas, somebody from childhood is very saintly, doesn't need a teacher, and just learns and becomes a saint. Raman Maharishi and Shankaracharya. And there are others from childhood, they find they are very active, you know, they are sportsmen, they want to play sports, and they are very running around, you know, just say, oh my God, this child, I can't control him. You know, the mother is pulling her hair and all. And there are others who are very creative. They may not be spiritual, but they may be very creative. They are artists. You know, they love to paint and draw. And you find even as a child, he's our gym instructor. I think you know her, and Diana knows. His daughter has beautiful paintings. She's so little. And if you look at her painting, he has a bunch of them on the wall. You think that some adult painted them. They are so pretty. So they may be very creative. Sattva does not only mean that only worshipping God, but very creative, you know, artistic. Or they love to write poems, or they love to read poems, or they love to read like science and math, and they want to know about physics and how the world came into. Those are all sattvic activities, where your mind is creative and your mind is tuned with the higher. But there may be a rajasic person who's overactive and gets into fights at school and bullies kids. You know, why? Because he is competing. So it could be nature, and then could be nurture, where the family atmosphere is like that. The father will say, I don't want my son to be a wimp. I want you to go out and fight and beat the other guy. And he will teach him boxing, and he will teach him karate, you know, so that he can. Or he will have guns in the house. And then the guy, today they found a 4-year-old, you know, bringing guns to the house. I mean, guns are okay for self. I don't want to get into the NRA dispute. But the attitude that somehow I have to destroy the other person. And they inculcate that attitude in their child. That you have to be tough, and you have to beat the other guy. And don't let anyone. It's okay, you for self-defense, you teach somebody is good, but if that child is going to go out and beat up on the other kids and bully them and treat them bad, and that's what we find, some of these kids who take guns to school and shot others were because they were bullied. They were bullied, and so they took out their anger after years, they couldn't tolerate it, then he finally got a gun from his father and went and shot the bullies. That's not right, I'm not saying that's a solution, but that's all. And then there may be others, we may find that guy doesn't want to work. He doesn't want to do anything. He just wants to be lazy. And he doesn't even go to, if you put him in school, he drops out of school. And then he just becomes a bum, or gets into drugs, or, you know, things like that. So some of it is nature and some of it is nurture. Where suppose he's in a drug household where everybody's taking drugs or everybody's drinking alcohol. The dad says, you know, my son, I want you to drink. You are a man. And he's about 7 or 8 years old, and he's giving him a beer. I know homes where, you know, people give their teenage kids, 10, 11, 12 year, 13 year old kids, give them scotch whiskey and say, you're a man now, you need to drink. So that is tamasic. That is not rajasic, that is tamasic, where you're teaching him to drink, to teaching him to take drugs. So it's a combination. There is some nature and then there is some nurture. So it's a, thank you for that. Very nice question.
I think all three is more likely than...
Right. No. We have all three. Mm-hmm. And there are occasions when you need to be active. There are occasions when you need to be peaceful. And then at night, you do want to sleep. So, but when that is done in balance, you know, that I need 6 hours or 7 hours of sleep. And then I need to work. But even when I'm working in a sattvic way. So the preponderance of my act and... Like Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of the mission, was very active, constantly moving about from one country to another and from one city to another. And he never stayed more than a week in a country or in a place. But his activity was not selfish. So he was all the time in control of his mind, in control of his... So... Balance is important, but the question is, what is your mind? This sattva, rajas and tamas, it does not depend on your physical activity. It depends on your state of mind. And that is the very important thing, that where is my mind? Even when I'm working, my mind could be with the Lord. Oh Lord, you are the one who has given me everything. And he could be even playing a football match. You know, we find some like Tebow, every time he scored a touchdown, he would bend down on his knees and thank. That became a Tebowing, actually became a verb, where you got down on your knees and remembered the Lord. So it does not mean that a football player could be, and some of the defensive linemen, you know, who are very powerful and they knock down the quarterback and they knock down the off. But when after the sack, they get down on their knees and thank the Lord. So they are doing the job that they were assigned to do. He has been told, you are a defensive lineman. You have to make sure the quarterback doesn't throw the ball. So his activity may be vigorous, but inside he is tuned with the higher. So it's more the mental attitude rather than what you do. The same, there could be a person who is a missionary or a head of a church or a mosque or a Hindu temple. You think, oh, this person is very spiritual. But his whole thinking is, how can I grow my church bigger? And how can I make my church better than the neighbor's church? You know, in his church or his temple, there's 200 people came this Sunday. Mine only 100 came. So how can I attract more? One is, of course, you spread the knowledge. But if his whole goal is, I can increase my church, so then I get more donations. And we find so many, you know, evangelists who you know, fly charter planes and have... Yeah, they miss the point. And it is in all the religions. It's not only in Christianity. You find it in Islam. You find it in Hinduism. But, you know, there are some priests who live like kings. So it's not what you do. It is what attitude with which you do that. Right. Majority of the time, your knowledge. Once the knowledge comes, that's why the guru is so important. That's why in Hinduism, they give a lot of importance to the guru, because he's the one who changes my attitude and my vision. Mm-hmm. See, your attitude and vision, once it changes, that this is my going to be what I want to do with my life, then your actions and everything else will follow. Your work, your activity, your relationships, your resource utilization, your diet, everything will change. So in my opinion, knowledge is the most important, and that comes from a teacher. It could be from a book or it could be from a living teacher. But in your case, you kind of backed into it.
No, I don't know. I
didn't
go that way.
Right. Yeah. Or sometimes it can be from within, because you have experienced that other side, you know, with all these problems and sorrows and misery. And then you say, I don't want this anymore. I want out of this.
Yeah.
I want to get out of that. And then either there can be an inner guru could be an inner teacher, where if you dedicate yourself, oh Lord, please save me from this. And it could be him, you know, in the form of the inner guru, or it could be a person you meet, somebody who told you. It doesn't have to be even be somebody with a priest's habit or wearing orange clothes. It could be a person who loves you and comes and tells you, you know, enough of this. So that person can become your guru also. It could be a parent, it could be a teacher, it could be a friend. But somehow, when you've had enough of that, then you want to get out of it. So it could be many ways, but some people just get tired of that. I'm tired of living this life and of being like this, where I'm all the time like a zombie and all the time unfunctional. So.